Welcome into another edition of the Jacob Bunn Show. I'm Jacob Bunn. Lots to talk about today. Lots of news around the sports world. Of course, the story we've been mainly focused on lately is the story of college football expansion. And where is that going? What has happened? What has not happened? As last time we spoke with you, it seemed a lot of things were fixing to happen in the world of college football to shake things up from top to bottom in a major way. Well, that did not happen. The SEC, we said, was most likely going to go after Texas A&M. A lot of reports are out there that they did, in fact, extend an invitation. Chip Brown said this morning that they did extend an invitation. Texas A&M refused. And the Big 12, what is it up to now? Well, how about the Big 12 has 10 teams? The Pac-10 added Colorado. They have yet to add anybody else. Rumors are all around that they will add Utah at some point, but they have not extended an invitation officially to Utah. So where is the Pac-10 right now? Well, it has 11 teams. The Big Ten is a conference that has, of course, been struggling the last few years, needed a boost. Now they have 12 teams. Why? Because they added Nebraska. Nebraska was a great addition, in my opinion, to the Big Ten because they really fit that mold, and plus they play good football in Nebraska. And they fit right in with the culture. So Nebraska has become the Big Ten's 12th team. The SEC, the ACC, and the Big East have made no moves. The SEC, as I said earlier, tried to get Texas A&M. Texas A&M decided not to come. So, let's review. The Pac-10 added, but did nothing for its conference. The Big Ten added, and I think did something for the conference. I mean, now it has 12 teams, and Nebraska is a pretty decent school. It's still the Big Ten. The Big 12 loses two teams. The SEC goes nowhere, and the other conferences don't do anything, except for the Mountain West. I forgot the Mountain West added Boise State, which is a good addition. They you know, are going to work themselves into a BCS bid before long with the way they're playing. The Big East didn't do anything, neither did the ACC. So, Pac-10 added, but didn't help itself. The Big Ten added, helped itself a little bit. The Big 12 committed suicide. The entity holding the gun here is Texas. Now, here's where the story gets interesting. Texas A&M reportedly, as I said, Chip Brown said this morning, Wednesday morning, Texas A&M did get an invitation from the SEC. If that is the case, then Texas A&M turned down an invitation to the best conference in the nation to stay with a Big 12 team, with a Big 12 conference with 10 teams. Let's review who is in the Big 12 right now. Texas, Texas Tech, Texas A&M, Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, 60% of the conference in two states. Then you have Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, and Missouri. The Colorado and Nebraska teams both left, so you have 10 teams remaining. Does anybody think that this conference has gone in reverse? I mean, losing two schools, albeit Colorado and Nebraska, were not powers at the current moment. They were still pretty good programs and have always been decently competitive. And we're talking about the Big 12 North, and they pretty much dominated the Big 12 North, but that's not saying much. But now the conference is left with those eight teams and has gone backwards. So unless they can figure out a way to add some more teams or, I don't know, do something. What could they do? I mean, does anybody have any ideas? Anybody out there have any ideas about what the Big 12 could do to help itself out? Or is it just going down the tube? And most people think that, you know, it'll probably be a two-year term for the Big 12, and then they'll be done. They'll just dissolve. They missed their opportunity to add Boise State. Boise State now has signed a contract with the Mountain West, and it's too bad. We'll talk to also just in a few minutes. Neil Thompson is going to join us to discuss the U.S. Open this week, major golf tournament. And Neil is gracious enough to give his time to us. He's going to join us a little bit later on in the program. So we will be switching gears out of this college football topic in a little while. Something else I want to get into real quick. The Lawrence Journal World, I believe is the name of the publication, in Lawrence, Kansas, the newspaper, reported this morning that Cowboys owner and Arkansas booster Jerry Jones said, or I don't know if it quoted him or if it just said sources close to him say that he is leaning this direction, said, talking about Jerry Jones, the Big 12 needs to, and he would endorse the expansion of the Big 12 by adding Arkansas, brace yourself, and Notre Dame. Arkansas and Notre Dame. Now, this is just my own personal little opinion here behind the microphone. Does anybody see Notre Dame as a Big 12 team? No. Notre Dame is not, just doesn't fit that mold. Arkansas does, because they were actually in the Southwest Conference at one point. But Notre Dame does not fit that mold in the least. And why would Notre Dame not go to the Big Ten and go to the Big 12? What sense does that make? But let's just say this, though. The fact that Jerry Jones would come out and say this, I don't know why he's saying it about Notre Dame. I don't know what pull he has there. But I will say this. If there's anybody who could tell the future of Arkansas, it's Jerry Jones, because he pretty much can make the future for Arkansas. He gives them a donation and says, why don't you guys go to the Big 12? They're going to go to the Big 12 because, once again, he is a very prominent booster, the former Arkansas player, Jerry Jones. Well, anyway, we need to switch gears here and get to our guest, but that's where we are at this hour. And so if you have a thought about it, email us. We'll be glad to hear from you, and we'll get back into it in a little while. But right now, we're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk a little bit about the U.S. Open, something we don't talk about very much is golf. And this week, the very large field is going to be convening on the West Coast as Pebble Beach is the site of this year's U.S. Open, Pebble Beach Golf Links. And today, Wednesday, the day before it begins, is actually Phil Mickelson's birthday. Well, it's just told me, so happy birthday to Phil, and maybe he can get two legs on a Grand Slam. We'll ask Neil Thompson about that coming up in just a second. So that's the setting the stage. Lucas Glover, am I right? Yes, Lucas Glover was last year's champion at Bethpage Black. He will try to defend his title. So we'll discuss that topic as well as much, much more with our expert golf analyst. Neil Thompson is joining us right now to preview the upcoming U.S. Open golf tournament. Neil, good afternoon, and thanks for being with us.
Pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Neil, last year we saw so many different players win the majors, and golf is just kind of going through a little change right now. Some of the younger players starting to emerge. Talk a little bit about that and the surgence of the younger players.
Well, there's a lot of good young players out there, as well you know, and I think it's about time some of them start stepping up. I think we had a lot of good players, the likes of, say, Adam Scott at the age of Justin Rose, that kind of late 20s, they say Hunter Mahan the same way. They're actually now starting to win and win, starting to get comfortable about winning, and hopefully we'll see some great things out of them. And then you have the very young age, the 20, 21-year-olds, the Ricky Fowlers, the Rory McIlroys, the Japanese chap, Itakawa, I think his name is. So, they're all coming to the fore too. So, and then you have the ones all in between, maybe like an Anthony Kim that's, is in between the two. And so I think, all the other sports, let's face it, most sports in the world, you know, 20-year-olds are in the prime of their life. So why shouldn't golf? I don't understand why we have to be peaking at 35 at times.
Right, right. Phil Mickelson won the Masters this year, and he seems to be, with the downfall as of late of Tiger Woods, he seems to be the best golfer out at the moment. Talk about his chances to potentially win a Grand Slam, all four major championships.
Well, I don't rate his chances too high. I don't think St. Andrews would suit him.
Yeah.
The British Open is always going to be the tough one for Phil Mickelson. Obviously, he knows how to win Augusta. And I apologize, I'm going to turn my car on, I apologize. He knows how to win Augusta. And he's won that many times over. He also, the US Open, I think he's finished runner-up like four or five times, hasn't he? So he knows how to get it done at the US Open. He just needs the right break here or there. You know, he may end up being like a Sam Snead that comes second about four times and never actually gets it done. Who knows? But Pebble Beach he's won on before in the AT&T. So he's comfortable. He could get it done at Pebble for sure. But the British Open is never going to be. It's going to be the awkward one for Mickelson, I think, because it's just, I think he's become a lot more creative. With his long game, he's always been creative around the green, but it's always been the high flop shot. And the British Open doesn't, you just any time it's really windy, I think he's a higher ball flight in player anyway. Now I don't know if the British Open really suits his style of play, because he's a higher ball hitter. He's more reliant on the maybe the long way to around the green. Maybe I'm wrong with this, but it's just what I've observed. I know he came close to shoot a few years ago.
Right.
5 or 6 years ago, but I think you'd have to try to hit the right week and the right course with it open for him. But I don't think St. Andrews suits him because it's sort of a draw shot, which would be a fade to him. And I'm not sure. I just wouldn't be one of those people that believe they'll win a Grand Slam.
Yeah, it probably would be a little far-fetched. You have a tremendous amount of knowledge about golf as a whole and the different courses. Have you ever played Pebble Beach?
I've never played Pebble Beach, no. I've not been out there. I'd like to go out there, if you're offering.
Well, not me. Talk about some of the things you want to watch for this week as a spectator of this tournament and this course.
Well, I would say, it's not a traditional U.S. Open, as in, you think of a northeastern course, a traditional tree line.
Right.
Graduated rough. You're going to get some of the graduated rough, I'm sure, the Pebble Beach, but which is not always the case with that if you were having a tournament, like I said, one of those traditional Oakland Hills, Oak Hill, country golf courses where often it's played. And so Pebble Beach has an additional challenge of being on the coast, so obviously you've got the wind. So it should be an interesting event. And I understand that the players that win the AT&T. I think the certain player, like I may help Mark Amir, won like five times, but everyone thought he may be a good bet at the US Open at Pebble Beach, never even contended. I think they play a completely different style of golf course when they play it in February and when they do it in the summer. And so, but the things to look for, it's all on the back nine on the last day, who can keep composed, who keeps their routine going. It's the old cliche stuff. They've got themselves in position, and it's who can kind of keep check of their emotions, not get too far ahead, and get the job done. It's that added pressure of a major championship, and that's what you got to look for. Obviously you want to get in contention. All you're looking for is a player to be in contention with, with 18, 9 holes to go, and then it could be your day. You may be feeling a bad day, you're feeling calm, everything seems to be going in slow motion, which is what you want.
Neil, people who aren't avid fans of golf became interested, at least to some degree, in the sport with the Tiger Woods debacle at the beginning of the year. He has certainly not boded well in the opening tournaments of the year. What do you think we'll see from him this week?
Well, I'm a Tiger fan. I've bet on Tiger many times. I've made money bet on Tiger. So I'd like to see him back. I'd love to see him back, but I'd love to see a win out of Tiger, but I don't think it. Just don't think he's quite there. He's struggling, and I think but the thing we've all believed that we broke Tiger off in some of it, some description or other, and he comes back and wins. So it's hard to write the bloke off, and who knows Pebble Beach is fantastic. You know, probably the best golf that they've ever been played was back in 2000 at the US Open that year. And his putting was incredible, those four tournament rounds, you know, when he blew everyone out of the water.
Oh, it was.
He blew everyone out of the water at the 2000 Open at Pebble. So, you know, maybe it's one of those things that, you know, emotionally he gets charged up for it, and all of a sudden it overcomes any, you know, swing issues that he may have going on, you know. So it's one of those things. Is he gets in the hunt, I guarantee he'll be casting a big shadow, you know. So it's one. But you know, right now the way it stands, the common thread is right off right now, because he's not, you know, he's struggling with his game. He's missing it both left and right off the tee.
Right.
And it's open. The key is finding the fairways, finding the green.
Well, I think you were right on there, and it would be easy just to write him off. But a guy like Tiger has resilience and will probably be back in no time.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I found interesting, I've not heard too many commentators pass about Tiger, was he came back from reconstructive surgery on his knee, and they've obviously been bugging him for a while after the US Open, obviously his win over Rocket Media, which was, what, about 2008? I believe he was out for roughly 8 months. And so that was a physical injury, mm-hmm. and everyone was wondering how he'd do when he got back. Obviously, when he returned, he was hitting the ball very well. I think he won like 5 times last year. And now, after the, you know, his indiscretions of the end of, or you know, the end of this year, he really didn't take anywhere near as much time off before he played again. It was, you know, a matter of say three, four months.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a physical issue. It was an emotional issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when he returned after the knee injury, he's come back far stronger than he has with this, baggage, mental, emotional baggage.
Absolutely.
Logical baggage. So it shows, really, to me, what a mental game it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
In other words, we look at him and we think what a great specimen, physical specimen he is. We think of his technique as extremely sound. But I think you can't underestimate what a fantastic mental game and strength that he has, and then maybe that's there's a little chink in the armor, maybe not when he's on a golf course, but that emotional side of him that all goes up into your mental makeup that isn't quite there right now. I don't know when he plays. It's hard to say, but I think there's never been an athlete, or in certainly golf terms, and maybe only him and Jack Nicklaus, of anything near the focus, and right now he may not have the focus that he once had.
Right.
It's hard to say. Only Tiger knows. No one else. We're all speculating. I just thought it was interesting to show that when he came back from something physical, it was easier for him to return than when he did coming back from something, you know, different.
I think that is a great point. Well, Neil is the director of instruction at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Course, Oxmoor Valley. Neil, you want to say a couple words about what you do there?
I'm the teaching pro out there, and we have a number of programs for anywhere from the beginner golfer to teaching a couple of tour pros. So anyway, we have a good time, and love to have people out there at Oxmoor Valley playing the golf course. And if you want to stop by and have a lesson, just have a look at the website, the RTJ Golf website, and have a look at the academy, and you'll find different programs and lesson rates that I offer. Thanks a lot.
Well, Neil is a great friend of mine, and we really appreciate him taking time out of his day to be with us. Hope you'll be with us again sometime. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Dave. Very nice of you.
All right. So we very much appreciate Neil being with us. Interesting comments by him regarding Tiger Woods, as well as a number of other golf issues. Doesn't think Phil Mickelson can win that Grand Slam, that ever so elusive Grand Slam. To win a Grand Slam for Phil this year, but if he ever has a place where he can win, I think Pebble Beach is a good course, and I think it probably fit his eye. The problem is, as Neil said just a few minutes ago, St. Andrews does not, and that's where they're playing the Open Championship in England. And, you know, Phil is a great player, but some of the conditions at St. Andrews just do not suit his style of play whatsoever. Will Tiger ever win a Grand Slam? Tiger's never won a Grand Slam. And, you know, I mean, will Tiger catch Jack's record is another thing, and hopefully we'll have Neil on again sometime to talk about these golf issues interesting golf subjects. But, you know, Tiger now, I think, six majors away from Jack's all-time record of 18, and I'd say it's looking pretty gloomy right now. But as Neil said, it's easy to write a guy off like that when he's not doing well and he's coming back from something mental like this. But don't discard Tiger in the least, because he is a fierce competitor, and he will be back in no time at all. Also, he made an interesting comment about the mental aspect of the game of golf versus the physical aspect. Tiger came back from his physical problems very nicely, but the mental baggage has not left him, it doesn't appear, and that is one thing that golfers understand, is when you're on that golf course, if things are not right in your life, it will catch up to you. And golf is an extremely mental game. You have to strategize, have to implement a lot of strategy. So we'll move on from that topic back to conference expansion. Seems to be the hottest story, and what a summer it has already been, and it is only promising to get even better as we move along. And that's what's so interesting. You know, a lot of people think, why do you want to just talk about conference expansion? So many shows are national shows, but it's such a great summer story. Summer usually the off season for most sports, not just football, and this summer we actually have something very, very interesting to talk about in the world of sports. So theoretically, let's play some theoretical games here. Theoretically, if some things happen, how would conference alignment shake up? And I mentioned the other day, and yeah, I'll admit it, I was 100% wrong. I thought the Big 12 was going to dissolve. It did not. I thought that they were going for this super conference, super conferences with 16 teams apiece. I thought they were going toward that model, and I still think they are to some degree. But let's highlight something real quick. This is an attempt by some people, and some people being mostly the media, to create a playoff system in college football, because there is not one right now. And the way they were going to do that is to make a four-conference, 16-team format, because that's basically a playoff in and of itself. You have the four winners, and then they play off. Well, they didn't get that. Now, the playoff system in college football has been debated. There have been pros and cons about that system, but the potential of it, and we're not going to get into a playoff versus non-playoff discussion here. I don't see the BCS being dethroned anytime soon. Now, the Mountain West, I think, is going to get an automatic bid to the BCS soon. I think it's every 4 years they reevaluate the conferences in the BCS and kind of judge them on what they've done. And I think the Mountain West is primed to get, they've done what needs to be done. I think they qualify for a BCS bid. So it'll be interesting to see if they do get one in the next couple years. I think they will, to be honest with you. I think the Mountain West, let's compare the Mountain West and the Big East. The Mountain West has had Utah several years ago under Urban Meyer come to the BCS, beat Pittsburgh, Big East team. The Mountain West has seen Boise State go undefeated, not once, but twice, both times winning a BCS game. And now, obviously, Boise State was not under the Mountain West's umbrella until they will be now, but they haven't been before, but they are under their umbrella now, so they do count toward the Mountain West. That does, in fact, help the argument in favor of them having a BCS bid. TCU, last year, going undefeated and playing, of course, a heavyweight bowl game with Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. And interesting, both bowls Boise won, they were both the Fiesta Bowl. And of course, the first time being the more dramatic. I think beating TCU is good, but now that's just an in-conference opponent for Boise State now that they've moved to the Mountain West. The first time they were beating the likes of Oklahoma, which was a huge moment for Mountain West schools, WAC schools, and mid-major schools around the country. Okay, So Boise State has done it twice. TCU has done it. As I mentioned, Utah did it. And Utah creamed Alabama in 2008 season, 2009 Sugar Bowl, 31-17. If I'm not mistaken, that may have been the only Mountain West SEC matchup. I would like to see if we could find another one. I could be wrong. That may have been the only Mountain West SEC matchup in the BCS. Here's what the Big East has done. The Big East has had 12 appearances. They're 6-6. They've had 7 different schools appear in BCS games. 6-6. But here's the kicker. 3 of their games were won by Miami. 2 were won by West Virginia and 1 by Louisville. Half of the wins of the Big East and the BCS are by a team currently not in the conference. So the current Big East rotation includes West Virginia and Louisville. So pretty unimpressive for the Big East. I dare say that the Mountain West Conference, with Boise State added to its, and that gives the Mountain West, if you add Boise State to its total, the Mountain West Conference has 5 appearances, and the Mountain West Conference is 4-1 in those appearances. I think that's much higher case than the Big East has. And so, you know, if you have to throw somebody out, please throw the Big East out, because they have added nothing. When you talk about the BCS bid, in the Mountain West, Utah, of course, as I said, beat Pittsburgh, beat Alabama, Boise State beat Oklahoma, beat TCU. The only loss by the Mountain West, get this, was to TCU. The only loss by the Mountain West was to Boise State. So now that's an in-conference loss. So the only time the Mountain West actually lost a BCS game was when it was playing itself. So directors of the BCS need to seriously look at giving this conference an automatic invitation each year to the Bowl Championship Series.
You said earlier in the show that the Big 12 tried to committed suicide, and I was just going to bring up the fact that they couldn't even do that right. They tried to commit suicide, and then Texas messed it up, and Texas A&M didn't leave, and they really messed up even committing suicide. So the Big 12 has just come out looking like a fool in this whole thing.
I don't think we've seen the last of expansion this year. Now, I'm serious. I think the Big 10 is not done shopping. The Big 10, one of its goals was to get a conference championship game. Okay, it's got 12 teams. It's got a conference championship game. It's accomplished that goal. But what was its real goal? What did the Big 10 really want? They want to be better than the SEC. And the 12 teams that they have now, while better, are still not up to the level of the SEC. The only way they can get better than the SEC is to add 4 more teams, to be a 16-team super conference. Then they would be better than the SEC, especially if they got TV markets. That's the only way it can happen. The Big Ten's not done shopping yet, folks. Missouri, Rutgers, several other teams that have been mentioned. Oh, yes. Even that little Catholic school in South Bend are all still on the table for the Big Ten, as far as Jim Delaney's concerned. And he knows it. And if that happens, it could shake up the entire landscape, because if they get a team away from the Big 12, like a Missouri, well, and they get a team away from the Big 12, the Big 12 either goes with 9 teams. I mean, they're going to have to seriously consider, you know, when they're going to end this thing, because, you know, the bleeding needs to stop. But they're going to go down to 9 teams. Well, you can have a conference with 9 teams. Or will they just quit? It's a very interesting question, but I don't think this conference expansion story is over. I could be wrong. Probably am. Been wrong before, but I really don't think that is going to happen. Special thank you again to Neil Thompson for joining us. See you next week on the Jacob Bunn Show.